Good morning. Thank you and hello to all of you who are at my last presentation and all the new faces out there. So my name is Todd Fraley. I'm from Respiratory Health Association. And as a local public health practitioner, I'd like to welcome you to the Windy City. As you've seen from the last 3 days, it's not actually very windy here. And we're called the Windy City actually because of our politics. And that's appropriate because I'm about to discuss a policy initiative that was adopted by our city council. Chicago was the first city to pass a restriction on the sale of mentholated tobacco products. And while many cities are now enacting restrictions of flavored tobacco, Chicago is still the only one, to my knowledge, that has a law that addresses menthol. So in today's discussion, we'll go through why Chicago was able to do what it did and then how it went about doing it. I have no relationships to disclose. So a quick introduction to Respiratory Health Association. Our mission is to promote healthy lungs and fight lung disease through research, advocacy, and education. We've been working to improve community lung health in Chicago since 1906. We help advance and implement strategies to decrease tobacco use and exposure to secondhand smoke. And while this presentation examines legal issues affecting local regulation of flavored tobacco, this is purely for educational purposes, and we do not provide legal services. So to give you a roadmap of the presentation, first we'll be discussing the legal framework that enables menthol-inclusive flavored tobacco policies like Chicago's. We'll discuss the Family Smoking Prevention and Tobacco Control Act of 2009, the case law from New York and Providence, the first jurisdictions to enact flavored tobacco ordinances under the authority of the Tobacco Control Act, and the arguments for whether menthol can be included in a flavored tobacco ordinance. Once the legal framework has been established, we'll discuss Chicago's policy process, the legal challenges to Chicago's ordinance, and Chicago's ongoing implementation and enforcement efforts. And finally, we'll go through some lessons learned. So states and municipalities have the express authority to regulate tobacco at the local level because of the Family Smoking Prevention and Tobacco Control Act of 2009. So I'm sure many of you know the Tobacco Control Act was the landmark law that gave the FDA the authority to regulate tobacco. There are many components of the Act, some of which I've bulleted on this slide, but for the purposes of our discussion, most important to know is that the Act gave the FDA the authority to regulate tobacco, it preserved state and municipal authority to address tobacco at the local level, and it banned the sale of flavored cigarettes, but exempted menthol cigarettes from that ban. So the full Tobacco Control Act is 84 pages long, but I wanted to single out three clauses that are particularly important. This is the section of the Tobacco Control Act that preserves state and local authority to regulate tobacco. It's a lot of text, but to summarize, the preservation clause says that states and municipalities retain the broad authority to regulate tobacco products. The preemption clause preempts local laws that regulate tobacco product standards. And preemption is the principle that a federal law can supersede or supplant any inconsistent state law regulation. And the savings clause provides an exception to preemption for local tobacco laws that are related to sales, distribution, possession, access, advertising, or use of tobacco products. And as you'll notice, there are two phrases that I've highlighted in red. There's a very subtle difference in the language that's used in the preservation clause and the savings clause. That's ultimately central to the argument for why municipalities can restrict flavored tobacco. The preemption clause says that municipalities can pass laws relating to or prohibiting the sale, but the savings clause only saves from preemption those laws that relate to the sale. So the very first city to utilize this preservation of local authority in furtherance of a law restricting flavored tobacco was New York City. New York City enacted their flavored tobacco ordinance in 2009. And their ordinance prohibits the sale of flavored tobacco products other than menthol products and except as sold in tobacco bars. I can't speak to their policy process, but I wanted to highlight some of the exact language that they used in their ordinance. So not only were they the first city to attempt such an ordinance, but they drafted their definitions very carefully in a way that's provided a model for every other city that's acted on flavored tobacco. Of note, under New York's definitions, whether or not a tobacco product is deemed a flavored tobacco product turns not what's in the product itself or what it's composed of, but on the flavor that's ultimately imparted to the user or how the product is described to the public. So, like any good public health initiative, it was challenged. And a group of tobacco manufacturers filed suit in federal court arguing that New York City's flavored tobacco law was preempted by the Tobacco Control Act. Specifically, they argued that New York's ordinance amounted to a product standard, which only the FDA can set. The Second Circuit Court of Appeals roundly rejected this argument. And focusing on New York's definition of a flavored tobacco product, the court noted that, quote, New York City does not care what goes into the product or how the flavor is produced, but only whether the final products are ultimately characterized by or marketed as having a flavor. So in defending the ordinance, New York argued that this isn't a product standard, but this is a restriction on sales. So remember that difference between the language in the preservation and the savings clause? This is where that comes into play. The savings clause only saves from preemption laws that relate to sales. Omitted from that clause are the words prohibiting sales. So arguably, if a law were prohibiting sales as opposed to merely relating to it, then the savings clause wouldn't be able to save it from preemption. And what the Second Circuit here ultimately said is that New York City's ordinance is not a total prohibition on sales, because the ordinance states that sales of flavored tobacco at adult-only tobacco bars is exempt from the prohibition. And because those pockets for purchase by illegal adults were left open, the ordinance did not amount to a total prohibition on sales, but merely relates to the sales, and thus it's saved by the savings clause. Now, interestingly enough, New York City at the time only had 8 tobacco bars in the whole city, and none of them sold flavored tobacco, but that really didn't matter to the court. The fact that a legal avenue was left open was enough to save it from preemption. And shortly after New York City's flavored tobacco law, Providence, Rhode Island enacted one of their own. Providence ordinance closely resembles New York's in most respects. The main difference is that their definition of characterizing flavor originally included flavor concepts like spicy, arctic, ice, cool, warm, hot, mellow, fresh, and breeze. And I'll address why that's important in just a moment. So like New York City, they were also sued. But this time, the tobacco companies alleged not just federal preemption, but also violations of the First Amendment, due process, and state law. The First Circuit Court of Appeals found that the ordinance was not preempted for the same reasons as New York City's. Providence had exempted smoking bars from their ordinance, so again, legal pockets for purchase were left open, and thus it was not a total sales prohibition, but merely relating to the sales. In reviewing the First Amendment and due process claims, the First Circuit said they didn't find any violations of either, but they did ultimately strike that flavor concept language because they said it only serves to confuse the definition of a characterizing flavor. And then they said words like chill or cool could be misconstrued to interpret menthol, which was otherwise exempt from Providence's ordinance. So while these two opinions are only legally binding in the geographic areas covered by the First and Second Circuit Courts of Appeals, which is New England, they provide insight into how a court may analyze a restriction on the sale of flavored tobacco elsewhere. So we've laid out why municipalities can restrict sales of flavored tobacco products, but we haven't really discussed menthol yet. And we're here because Chicago restricted the sale of menthol products. So what does the law say about menthol? Well, prior to Chicago, there were some arguments either way regarding local authority to regulate the sale of menthol. Looking at the Tobacco Control Act's legislative history, the Act's official report and congressional debate show that Congress didn't ban menthol cigarettes when it banned flavored cigarettes because it was concerned that a lot of people use menthol products, about a third of all smokers. And banning those products, taking them off the market, would leave a whole bunch of addicted adults who would need access to cessation services, and there was a lot of concern that those services would not be available. So they exempted menthol from the ban. Likewise, the Second Circuit in the New York City case said that New York City's ordinance wasn't a product standard, in part because they were only addressing a niche product and not a large category of products. So again, menthol is a pretty large category of products. I suppose an argument could be made that menthol would fit into that. But on the other hand, there is no express preemption of local authority to regulate menthol in the Tobacco Control Act. And Congress giving the FDA the power to eventually regulate menthol doesn't in and of itself create a preemption conflict. And there is Supreme Court guidance on that in other regulatory schemes. And then finally, what I think is the strongest argument So again, if you prohibit the sale of menthol products, but you leave those pockets open for legal purchase, then the savings clause should still apply. So now we can talk about Chicago. Chicago's action on flavored tobacco and menthol is actually a long time coming. Chicago Department of Public Health first started exploring this issue in 2004. They wanted to do something to address menthol use in the city, but there was a lot of concern about targeting a product that's used so heavily by the city's minority communities, and then there just wasn't political will at the time to do any programming. But ultimately, this started building up a grassroots base of support for action on menthol. Fast forward several years later, Mayor Rahm Emanuel comes into office, and he takes a very strong stance on public health and especially on tobacco use. And in July of 2013, when the FDA released their report on menthol cigarettes, within 2 days of that report being released, Mayor Emanuel called the Chicago Board of Health to action to explore menthol and asked that they hold public hearings on the issue. The next month, the Board of Health dedicated their monthly meeting toward the topic of menthol. And there's a very powerful presentation from Dr. Alicia Matthews of University of Illinois Chicago's School of Nursing on the public health impact of menthol. And at the end of this meeting, the Board of Health ultimately passed a resolution to hold town hall meetings on menthol tobacco use. So in September of 2013, the Board of Health held 4 town hall meetings across the city. And these meetings were strategically located in neighborhoods with populations most disproportionately impacted by menthol. So the first one was on the south side at Chicago State University, which is a majority African-American community. The second one was in Little Village on the near southwest side, which is a majority Latino community. The third one was held in East Lakeview at the Center on Halsted, which is an LGBTQ resource center. And then the fourth one was held in Austin on the west side, which is a majority African-American community. Now, these meetings ultimately are what I think was the single most important step that the city took in exploring flavored tobacco and menthol. The rallying cry that was uttered over and over at these meetings was, "Nothing about us without us." Flavored tobacco disproportionately affects these priority populations, so if the city was going to do anything about it, they needed to be involved in the process. So at these meetings, over 200 community members came and gave powerful testimony on the excessive death tolls in their communities, the financial toll of tobacco use on their families, stories of children becoming addicts or growing up without parents. And then also public health organizations like RHA came and testified at these meetings on tobacco use and tobacco policy. And these meetings were organized around the question of what should the city do about flavored tobacco. It was a very broad discussion. And ultimately this resulted in dozens of resident-generated policy solutions. And the solutions included everything from limiting where it could be sold, advertising restrictions, penalties for illegal sales, better access to cessation, and then cracking down on the sale of Lucy's. Another one of the great successes of Chicago's menthol efforts was the community education about menthol that was conducted both inside and outside the scope of the policy effort. In the summer of 2013, prior to and separate from any of the policy action on menthol, CDPH started developing the Burned by Menthol Cigarettes campaign. This campaign ran twice between 2013 and 2014, and between the two runs generated about 272 million total media impressions across print media, public transportation, and internet. And then specific to the policy initiative, CDPH and the Board of Health issued a 40-page policy report on menthol cigarettes, compiling all of the results from the town hall meetings, as well as all the available health data and policy analysis on flavored tobacco and menthol. And what resulted is probably about the most comprehensive analysis that's ever been done on menthol cigarettes. And I've been told Mayor Emanuel was so impressed by this that he personally delivered copies of it to all 50 of the city's aldermen. So finally, in December of 2013, Chicago's flavored tobacco ordinance, inclusive of menthol, was adopted. Like New York City, the definitions match up, except that in terms of the characterizing flavor, Chicago included menthol, mint, and wintergreen. In terms of the prohibition, they prohibited sales within 500 feet of any school. They exempted retail tobacco shops, that was already in the law prior. And then the definitions are written broadly enough to include e-cigarettes as well. So when this first went through, it went through a joint committee on finance and health. And at this meeting, dozens of public health and medical experts testified in support of the ordinance. And, you know, call it shrewd politicizing or call it pure luck, but the flavored tobacco ordinance was introduced at the same time as the city's two e-cigarette ordinance. The two e-cigarette ordinances got all of the media attention, it drew out all of the opposition, and then the menthol ordinance was able to slip through unopposed. Of course, the city got sued. There were three separate lawsuits against the city, two of which were ultimately dropped, and this one up here is the only one where an order and opinion was actually issued. And the federal judge heavily cited the Second Circuit's case out of New York City, and like the Second Circuit, said that the ordinance in question was relating to rather than prohibiting sales, and that Chicago's ordinance is a sales restriction, not a product standard. Interesting to note, the judge here did not mention the menthol components of the ordinance once in his opinion. He just talked about flavored tobacco in a fairly broad terms. So finally, Chicago's ordinance is still being implemented right now. CDPH began by implementation by reaching out to the tobacco retailers that would ultimately be affected by the ordinance. About 440 of 2,700 retailers will ultimately be affected. CDPH issued letters to all of them and then conducted public hearings to educate them on the ordinance and then get feedback on the best ways to implement it. In addition, the retailers were given a 90-day grace period in order to clear out their current stock of flavored tobacco products. And CDPH passed administrative rules that involved enforcing the ordinance through the use of a website that would enable retailers to simply plug in a UPC code and then check whether or not that product was banned or not. Unfortunately, there were some technical problems with the website, and rather than fix the website, CDPH ultimately issued new rules. That was just this summer. It went through a 60-day public comment period, and they are now going through those comments and then re-implementing those rules. So lessons learned from all of this. So first, you want to build your evidentiary base and thoroughly vet all the policy options. We saw that from the Board of Health's comprehensive report on menthol. You want to define the flavored tobacco product based on the flavor imparted and how the manufacturer describes the product, not based on the ingredients additives. That goes to New York City's definition that's been used throughout and its preemption concern. And then you want to leave pockets open for purchase by legal adults. And this is that relating to versus prohibiting sales discussion against another preemption concern. And then from Providence, we learned that you want to avoid vague flavor concepts like cool, breeze, and fresh. And in terms of adoption and implementation, you want to engage priority populations. We saw the success of Chicago's four town hall meetings. Again, I really want to stress that this was the most important thing that the city did, was to engage these priority populations that are disproportionately affected by menthol. Utilize the public health and medical community. Throughout, there was testimony from public health organizations and doctors on the harms of tobacco use. Carefully consider the ease of enforcement mechanism. So as we just saw from the last slide, Chicago had some issues with their website. So you want to consider what's the ease that you'd be able to actually enforce this in your own jurisdiction. And then lastly, we haven't seen this yet, but I would recommend incorporating cessation programming. Again, menthol is used by about a third of all smokers. So if you took that product off the market, there's a lot of adults that would need cessation services. So incorporating that would ultimately add to the success of an eventual ordinance on this. And that is it. Thank you.